Let's begin at the beginning. Not exactly at the beginning. One thing I don't want to discuss in terms of the history is the legends about where the how the Temanim got to Teman, how Jews got to Teman in the first place. You might have heard the legend of about Ezra Sofer, back and forth. You know, who hasn't heard that from their grandparents? You know, but that's we're not going to get into that because we don't know too much about that. We're gonna talk about in terms of the history of halacha. just to begin by trying to show what the derech of the Jews in Teman was in Psak Halacha. I sometimes like to describe this in terms of thinking about like what's the difference between what happened to the Jews in Teman and the Jews in Ethiopia. You know, so the difference is the Jews in Teman stayed in touch with the Chachamim of every generation. So that you know, so that they had Torah Shebal Peh. When the Talmud came out, they accepted the Psak of the Talmud. When the Geonim arrived on the scene, so they sent their shelot to the Geonim. So we see that already here in page 1. This is Tshuvot Geonim Shari Tshuva. Just an example, just to get a sense, you know, of how they were in touch. You take a look in Siman Tzadik Tet. So the this is a Tshuva from Rav Kohen Tzedek Gaon, right? He's 8th century or so. He says, Atem Yodim Ki Barba Pinot Nichnas Bilibam Lachzir HaTorah Liyoshna. Everyone is Shevach Lakel. Everyone is sending questions. Shalchin shluchin mikol haratzot. They send questions from all over the lands to the yeshivot of the Geonim in Babylonia, and he says miteman umizrach umtzafon meretzkush Ashkenaz Tzafat Aspamia. He gives all the different places that send questions to the Geonim, and he mentions the first he mentions is Teman. Temanim send questions to the Geonim. In case you might have said nah, Teman, this that means in the south. They send from the south and from the east. Take a look at on the next page. Another tshuva of the Geonim, from a volume called Tshuvot Geonim Harkavi, he says, "Harei ksafim al temania habayim lefanenu." So they send. When you send a question to the Geonim, you also had to send a check, right? That was how the yeshivot kept going. They had thousands of talmidim who used to come during Elul and during Adar to learn. And they all had stipends, so they when you said the shela, you always had to send a check, right? So the ksafim al temania, right? The Yemenite money comes in. Habayim lefanenu ad achshav me'eretz Yaman, right? Yaman is Teman in Arabic. Kol zuzman yesh bo echad mishmona ksafim alal shebabavel. Each coin they send is worth 8 coins from Bavel, the amount of silver in it. So you see that the Temanim were in touch. So it's no surprise that the yeshivot of the Geonim lost their prestige after Rav Haigon passed away in the middle of the 11th century. So you know it was really a bit of a desolation after that. And it was no surprise when the Rambam arrived in Cairo in Egypt from Spain. So he became the authority of the entire Middle East. And the Jews in Teman sent their shelot to him. There's actually an account from Rabbi Yoshua Nagid, who's a grandson of the Rambam. He said that out of all the countries that sent shelot to the Rambam, the Temanim sent more than anybody else. They sent personal messengers to the Rambam to copy his books, to ask him questions. And we know there was a special relationship between the Rambam and the Temanim, most famously from Igeret Teman. Igeret Teman was a letter that the Rambam sent to the Jews of Teman. It was dealing with, they had a lot of troubles, a lot of tzarot. There was a false Mashiach, there was Shmad, they were trying to get them to convert to Islam. And so the Igeret Teman is also known as the Petach Tikva, the opening of hope, right? Because the Rambam really was mechazek the Jews of Teman to believe in their traditions. Igeret Teman has a lot of refutations of Islam. The author discusses Mashiach, how do you tell the difference between a real Mashiach and false Mashiach? And it was really gave them a lot of chizuk. So in addition to the connection of Psak Halacha, that they followed his authority, there was also the connection of that he was mechazek them and he really kept them Jewish in a certain way. This was the third was disseminated. So take a look in page 3. It's a little something the Rambam says about the Temanim. So he says, "Vasocharim haknanim kulam yachad l'shoalem onim." He says all the travelers, when Jewish travelers, they always say, "Kimatzu mata yafen v'naman." When they come by the Arabian Peninsula, right? They sail by Aden. They stop there. And they found such a beautiful Jewish community. Umer tov kol razeh bo yishman. Very nice words. Uloreem bo mireh ne'eman. Yoshver et teman. V'chi hem ladal notnei lachmo. They're very big balei tzedakah. Misad le'ashir makdimei shlomo. And even the rich people, they're so nice to them. Halichot shva kivulamo. Yadam lechover over derech metucha. V'etam petuch l'revacha. Now look at this. They learn all day long. Right? They follow the Gemara. Rodefei Tzedek, Machzik Bedek, Mamikei Kra Torah Tilam, Mekabtim Nifzarei Hashem Bimilulam, Mekamei Chol Mitzvot Midikdukehem, Makelotehem, En Peretz Ven Yotzet, etc. So in other words, and even if you look on the next page, even when he writes to the person who sent the letter to him saying, please help us, he says, V'chasher Yigi Aleinu K'tavacha Yakirenu L'Mitzrayim, So the questioner, I forget his name just this moment. The question he says, I see from your letter you're a big Talmid Chacham, you learn all the time. So not only were the Tamanim sending questions, but they were learning Torah, they were fulfilling the mitzvot, Kalaka Chamura. And a very striking passage in page six from the Kitvei Ramban. This is the Ramban was writing during the whole argument about the Rambam, that the Rambam wrote things, in Hashkafa and Machshava that didn't, weren't liked by everybody, right? He was into philosophy and things like that. So there was a big fight about the books of the Rambam, and the Ramban was the one who said he sent a letter to the Chachamei Ashkenaz. It was really the Balei HaTosafot who were very upset, and he sent a letter to them. He said, "Listen, you don't understand the Middle East. You don't understand what's going on. You don't understand how big the Rambam is, and you don't understand what a tremendous hashpa'ah he has everywhere he touches." So, for instance, he mentions that the Rambam destroyed the Karaite community in Egypt. He destroyed them single-handedly. He arrived there, the Karaites were pretty much running the show, right? But didn't believe in the Gemara. And he said the Rambam wiped the floor with them. He said, if you now criticize the Rambam, you know what you're going to do to the community in Egypt? They're all going to say, if the Rambam is not, then they're going to go back to the way it was before. And in another of his examples, take a look in number 6, the Ramban writes, "Hineim meid alai lifnei rabotai shamayim v'aretz, ki shamanu mimagidei emet shebechol haaretzot malchut Teman." So I testify for me, that I heard from true witnesses that in all of Teman, kilot rabot oskim b'torah mitzvot lishman, right? They all learn Torah. Hayu maskirim shem harav bechol kaddish v'kaddish, and they mentioned the Rambam's name in the kaddish. I mean, obviously, when the Rambam was still alive, I can't tell you how many times Ashkenazim asked me, "Do you still mention the Rambam and the Kaddish?" Oh, right? And look what they say with the Rambam. You'll see at the end. He says, "What do they say?" "B'chayechon v'yemechon v'chayed Rabban Moshe ben Maimon." Right? So obviously, when the Rambam died, they took that line out. Meaning, in the lifetime of the Rambam, if Mashiach should come in the lifetime of the Rambam, that was what they put in the Kaddish. So obviously, we don't say that anymore, as everybody who prayed in the Temani Shul knows. But people always ask me about this because it's such a famous line. Okay. But look what he says. He says, "Asher ha'ir eneim b'Torah ve'midam b'keren orah levatel men gzirot kashot v'chol b'damas." He said the Rambam not only was mechazek them, but he also used his political connections to make life easier for them. He gave the taxes. Ki ayu katit chutzot mimas. They were depressed. They were being oppressed. Malem ol machudarim v'chelum ad mimasam melech v'sarim. And so he helped them out politically to take some of the oppression away. So therefore they had such a karat hatov to him. They put his name in the Kaddish. So we see here the special connection between the Rambam and the Jews of Teman. Okay, so now we'll skip forward 400 years. During this time, of course, people often ask, like, were there Rishonim Teman? Were there Achonim? Achonim, for sure they were. Were there Rishonim Teman? Were there people writing Sfarim in the 12th century, 13th century, 14th century, or before, or after? The answer is yes. We know that there were Mechabrei Sfarim, there were great Rabbanim who wrote Chidushim on the Gemara, who wrote Piskei Halacha, right? Problem is that many of these we don't have anymore. We just know about them. So why don't we have all this material? So first of all, there's a lot of material which has simply not been published. It's sitting in manuscripts. People like Rav Tzalbi and others, try to put out a little bit at a time, right? But one of the reasons we don't have a lot of this material, it is an event which all the Temanim remember. At least I didn't know about it, but I was told about it. There's an event called Galut Mauza. You've heard of Galut Mauza. Right? Galut Mauza happened in 1679. The Imam decided that he was going to kick out. He was going to offer the Jews convert or die.
Who said this?
The Imam. The Imam. They were Shiites, so they were ruled by the Imam, just like they have Ayatollahs now. So they had Imam. The Imam. His word was law, and he said that the Jews have to convert or die. And then he changed his mind. He said, "You know what? We can either convert or I'll kick you out of the country, right? We can kick you out of the country." So what does that mean, kick you out of the country? Where are they going to go? So they expelled the entire community of Teman, large area, to a little island off the coast. And there was on that island there was a town called Mauza, right? So they called the Temanim called this Galut Mauza. The entire community was expelled to Mauza. And Mauza, first of all, they say like about half the Jews died on the way because it was so difficult to get there. They had to travel from all across Teman by foot. They got to this island. The island, the water was salt. The water was bad water. It was a terrible place to live, and they were cramped, I suppose. And they brought whatever they could with them. They brought Sifrei Torah. They brought, Sifrei Gemara, right? But they couldn't bring everything they had with them. They had Pirushim and Kitvei Yad, you know, going back hundreds and hundreds of years. And they tried to bring as much as they could with them, but many things were destroyed on the way. Many things when they got there were ruined by the conditions over there. And things they left behind in charge of Arabs who were supposed to take care of them were torched. This is a disaster, not just for the Temanim, but for all of Klal Yisrael, because the Temanim were known for collecting Kitvei Yad. Many manuscripts of Rishonim, of Gemarot, were found only in Teman. Things which were preserved only in Teman, not of Temani Chachamim, of Rashi, of the Ravad, of the Ramban. Things that the Temanim, they love to collect Sfarim.
How did they get it?
So, it's interesting, you asked that. How did the Temanim stay in touch? This is a very simple historical fact. Before they discovered you could sail around Africa to trade with India and China, you had to go through, there was no Suez Canal, you had to go through the Red Sea. So you came out via the Arabian Peninsula, and the main stop on the way to India was Aden. So that was the trade route. There's the Silk Road that goes across by land, but if you want to go by boat, you stop in Aden on the way. So there was a lot of trade going back and forth, Eretz Israel, with Italy, with Spain, going back and forth. They would always stop in Aden. So that's how the Temanim would be very much in touch. Later on, it became a backwater because they discovered you could go around Africa, and then nobody stopped in Teman anymore. But initially they had, so they collected a huge amount, and vast, vast quantities of Sifrei Kodesh were destroyed in Galut Mauza. That's what they call it, the exile of Mauza. So this is, again, this is relevant in terms of saying why we don't have so many things that we should have. But it becomes very relevant because when they came back, the exile lasted for a year until the Imam changed his mind because they said, economic reasons, right? That we need the Jews back. He changed his mind. They brought all the Jews back. And when they came back, there was a great confusion about Jewish practices because, half the people died. Many of the great Rabbanim died. Among the Rabbanim who was in Galut Mauza is Rabbi Salah, who was the grandfather of the Maritz, Rabbi Salah. Rav Shalom Shabazi was there, who's a Paitan. He wrote a lot of poetry and piyutim. They were there, and many of the great Rabbanim died during Galut Mauza. It was too hard for them. They're old men. Some of them died even on the way. So when they came back, it was very, very confusing. People didn't know what to do. Right? At the same time, the printing had recently been invented, right? So printed books were beginning to arrive in Teman.
What year is this now?
This is 1679, 1680. The day after Galut Mauza, they come back and they're trying to figure out what to do. So before Galut Mauza and then after even more so, they started to get printed books, especially the Shulchan Aruch, with the commentaries, Beretev, Magen Avraham, right? They started to get Sidurim, right? Sfardic Sidurim, printed in Livorno. Right in Italy, and the combination of one again, the Kitvei Yad were hard to come by. You have to write everything out by hand. The combination of Galut Mauza with the fact that they were getting these beautiful, beautiful printed Sidurim. We look at them now as hard to read printing from that time, but if you compare it to handwritten things, right? It's first it's like laser printing, as opposed to notes, It was a big impact. And then the third factor was the pattern that we've been developing. The Temani attitude was, we follow the Gedolei Aposkim of the Middle East. Right? First we followed the Geonim, then the Rambam, and now the Shulchan Aruch. Right? And in Eretz Yisrael, they said in Eretz Yisrael, they pray the Sephardic Nosach now. Keep in mind, in Eretz Yisrael, before the Sephardim arrived in Eretz Yisrael in 1492, after the expulsion from Spain. Before that, they prayed what was basically a Temani Nosach. The Temani Nosach Tefillah is not only the Temani Nosach, it was the Nosach of the entire Middle East. The ancient Persian Nosach is very similar, the ancient Syrian Nosach is very similar. But when the Sfaradim arrived in 1492 with the great rabbis that they came with, right, Gedolei Olam, you know, like Rav Yosef Karo and the Radvaz and other very, very great rabbis, so they changed the landscape. And so Nosach Eretz Yisrael became the Sephardic Nosach. And the Psak of Eretz Yisrael became the Sephardic Psak. Now, what's the difference between Sephardic Psak and Middle Eastern Psak, or what later became Temani Psak? The Middle East, they followed the Rambam. They followed the Rambam Nerif. They didn't follow, for instance, the Rosh. The Rosh was a Spanish, or Ashkenazi Spanish, Talmid Chacham, who integrated a lot of the Psakim of the Baalei HaTosafot. The Ramban and the Rashba, Sephardic Talmid Chachamim, many, many of their Psakim were based on the Tosafot. Right, so they were kind of a hybrid. The Sfardim, when they arrived in 1492, they brought with them a Nosach Tefillah, which was a different Nosach than the Middle Eastern Nosach. They brought with them a tradition of Psak Halacha, which was a different tradition. Right, I think I'm not sure who it is who said it. From that time, they said that the Posek of the Sfardim is the Rosh. He was the Av Beit Din in Toledo, in Spain, and he combined Sfardic Psakim with Ashkenazi Psakim to create a new tradition. Right, so people had a feeling that, you know, now the world is changing. You know, now Rav Yosef Karo is the one who everyone's following, and we should follow that. And that makes a lot of sense. Just like they switched from the Geonim to the Rambam, even overturning certain minagim. So too, many people said we have to go with the Shulchan Aruch. Perhaps the most famous for taking this position that we should switch everything or most things to the Shulchan Aruch was Rav David Mushriki, who was author of the Shtilei Zetim, a very famous book. There's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, and he also wrote Tshuvot Revida Zahav, which is what we have here in number 7. Tshuvot Revida Zahav. The question here is about eating fruit on Pesach that was cooked in chametz pots, before Pesach. Right, so it was batel before Pesach. Let's say it was a pot that you hadn't used in 24 hours. But the Rambam says that seems like batel before Pesach, it's still not allowed on Pesach, because there's what we call chozer v'ne'or. It comes back, just like on Pesach, you don't know, there's no bitul, even a tiny crumb of chametz makes all the food forbidden. So too, even before Pesach, the Rambam says, a tiny crumb will make it not allowed to eat on Pesach. So the question was about butter. That was the question. It was a big problem, because they, Temanim have samne, which is the clarified butter, which they eat, so they cook it, they make very large quantities, and for a long time. So can you use it on Pesach? So look what the Revida Zahav says, David Mushriki, or Mizrahi. Mushriki means Mizrahi, Eastern, right? Sometimes this is called Rav David Mizrahi, right? So he says, Od, Katav Tocha Tshuva, Vezel Lashon, he says, responding to someone who wrote a question to him, or an answer, Kevan Shena Agubekan Bimkomen Lesora Chema, He says, the minhag teman is to not allow the butter. Based on what? The psak of the Rambam. Right? Right? So what does he respond? He says, I know that there's a minhag to not allow the butter. I know that it's based on the Rambam. He says, I can't believe what he's saying. But now look at this thing about it. We follow Maran HaKadosh, Shulchan Aruch. Right? Temanim usually call Ramam Rabbeinu, and Shulchan is Maran. So we follow Maran HaKadosh. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch permitted the butter. He said it doesn't come back. So the Revi Zav says, don't bother me with the minhag. Don't bother me with what we had before. Now we have a new rabbi. A new rabbi arrived. He now sets the tone. Rav Yosef Karo arrived. He decides what we're going to do.
Yeah. Is David Mashriki the first Shami?
He wasn't the first. There were people before him also. Even before Galut Mauser, the people who started to have this perspective. But he's considered maybe like the head. Again, he's maybe considered like one of the heads of the idea of being Shami, right?
The Shulchan Aruch was before Galut Mauser?
The Shulchan Aruch was written in the 16th century, so it arrived before, right? But after Galut Mauser, it became even more popular because of the confusion that surrounded the prior Minagim. That's right. He lived, David Mashiach, he lived 1696 to 1771. So he was born 20 years after Galut Mauser, and he died in 1771. He took this out, and many Tanachim took this approach. They said, we have a new Marad Atra, a new rabbi, Rav Yosef Karo. He's going to decide. If you look also in the introduction to the Shtilei Zeitim, he says this approach in page 8. The introduction to the Shtilei Zeitim is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch.
Is this how there was a split between the Yishani and the Baladi?
So this is when the split began. This is the beginnings of the split. We haven't yet seen. There were Batei Knesset. Again, some said we have to follow the Sephardic Sidurim. The issue with the Shani and Baladi split was mostly about the Sidur, and mostly about Minagei Tefillah and Brachot. Right? So the Haggadah, anything which was printed, which the simple people had in their hand, a Sidur, a Haggadah, that was where the split mainly occurred. In Psak Halacha, there was also a split, but you have to differentiate between them, and there's different versions of this. Some people say the Shami really didn't make such a break with in terms of Psak Halacha. They also followed the old Minhag in many areas in terms of Psak Halacha. Just the Sidur they changed. You know, other people say, no, the Shami went all the way to the Shulchan Aruch, or almost all the way to the Shulchan Aruch. Do you have the same question at the Baladi? The Baladi did everything like what they had before, or no, the Baladi took on many of the practices of Shulchan Aruch. We'll see as we go. But we'll see as we go exactly how the chips fall. In terms of the Shtilei Zeitim, his attitude was definitely that the Shulchan Aruch is the Ikar, right? So look what he says, for instance, here in page 8, in the introduction to the Shtilei Zeitim. He says, look in the fourth line after the arrow. Alken, at the end of the line. Alken, aposkim achronim, enam korim lo, ela b'shem Maran. They call Shonuch Maran. Why? Why they call him Maran? L'diachaki, hu marad ara. He is the one in charge. He's our master. V'chol shekin b'aretz hazot eretz teman. For sure in eretz teman, we should follow Maran. We do follow Maran. We follow Shonuch. Why? Ki b'avonot ha-rabim, doha kabar nasa, tol eretz tzua, chas shom ha-sham. V'olmer, so we have such tzarot, right? We finally got this from the Rav Yosef Karo. Look what he writes. First word on the line is Acher. Achar shayu kadmonen zal bechol inanem noagim bal pi Rambam. It used to be they followed the Rambam. Ki sifrei zelotom mehamechabrim lo nimtza etzlam. Because they didn't have any other book to follow. So they followed the Rambam. That's the only book they had, was the Rambam. This line could only have been written after Galut Mauser. Right? Because the fact is we know now that they had many Sfarim, and they had Rashi, and they had Tosfot, and they had Rosh, and they had everything. They followed the Rambam, because they followed the Rambam. But this was his perspective. He said that Achshav nitbashet haSefer Katzar. He says, now we had Shulchan Aruch, we should follow the Shulchan Aruch. Now, people sometimes mistakenly think that Shtilei Zeitim did away with all the Minhagim. That's not really true. Just to give an example, one Minhag, on page 9, the Shulchan Aruch says on page 9, Shulchan Aruch is printed at the top. This is the Shtilei Zeitim on the bottom. One of the very special thing about the Shtilei Zeitim is he took out the bits of the Rama which we don't follow Shulchan Aruch, disagree with Shulchan Aruch. He took them out. Why did he do that? He took them out because they were very confusing to people. People learned Shulchan Aruch with the Rama from the printed books, and they thought we should follow everything it says here. Right? So they were following the Rama many times, totally against our tradition, Psak Halacha. Right? Against Rav Yosef Karo, against Shulchan Aruch also. So he said, you know, I'm going to make a book I'm going to take out the bits of the Rama which are confusing people, which are not, we don't follow. So that's just, and the body has a commentary called Shtilei Zeitim, which is collects from the classical Nosei Kelim, the classical commentaries on Shulchan Aruch.
Who's the Shtilei Zeitim collected from who? Levush, like the
Levush, the Magen Avraham, the Pri Chadash, all the classical, both Ashkenazi and Sephardi and commentaries.
Oh, okay.
You know, just again, sometimes people think like if you're a Sephardic, you have to follow only Sephardic commentaries. If you're Ashkenazi, you follow only Ashkenazi. If you're Temani, you have to follow only Temani commentaries. Not really true. The Torah is one Torah. The Magen Avraham, you know, even though he's Ashkenazi, he understands, you know, everything, you know. So you have to always know what depends on different minhagim. But of course, you know, the commentaries, and of course he has his own chidushim here now and again too. So take a look here. The Shulchan Aruch rules Sif Mem Gimel. Achar shiva yemei avelut nosek kapav. An avel, a person who's in mourning during shiva, shouldn't, if he's a kohen, he shouldn't say nesiat kapayim. B'toch shivat yemei avelut yetze mi bet hakneset b'shat shekore kohanim. Person who's during the shiva, they don't say nesiat kapayim. But look at what the Shtilei Zeitim says about this on the next page. Right? Shamati mipi magidei emet. Shaya minhag lisa kapayim mikarov bitlu. He said, I heard that true witnesses who told me that until not long ago the minhag was that we did say Nisiyat Kapayim. The Avel Shemik Shiva did say Nisiyat Kapayim, and they only recently got rid of it because they read in Shulchan Aruch you're not supposed to do that. And what does he say? Lachen ani omer shamoneh bichlal moneh rabim ma'asot b'tzvah k'ren lo chafetz v'chol. He says, I think we should bring back the old minhag. We should bring back the old minhag against the Shulchan Aruch. We should say that the Avel during Shiva does do Nisiyat Kapayim vis a Kohen. Right? So the Shtilei Zedim occasionally would come out swinging on behalf of the old minhag if he believed it was very firmly founded. And this really brings us to his Talmid, his student, the Ma'aretz, Rabbi Yehuda Salah, Rabbi Yehuda Salah, right?
He's the student of the
Shtilei Zedim, of the Rav David Mushraki. And he, you know, it's hard to say that it was really a strong machloket. There was a strong machloket between him and the Shtilei Zetim. In his youth, he followed this approach. And again, what's the foundation of the approach of Shtilei Zetim? Take a look. Take a look in the Etz Chaim. This is the commentary on the Siddur of the Ma'aretz. He lived 1714 to 1805. The Ma'aretz. He was the grandson of Rabbi Salah, who was during Galud Mauza. Who's also a big posek. We have some of his Sfarim too, Rabbi Salah. So he says, this is about the question of whether you should in the Hoshanot, on Hoshana Rabbah, we know that there's a big machlok, whether you should say Ve'yavor. Should you say Yud Gimel Midot during the Hoshanot? Right? So Sfaradim do not. Why don't they? They used to. Because they say Slichot, but they just leave out Ve'yavor. Because Arizal said, you're not supposed to say Ve'yavor on Hoshana Rabbah. Right? So the Ma'aretz says, he says here in the Etz Chaim, which is commentary on the Sidur, he says, "Mikan kovlana dechol man debay leshinu minhaga chatz v'shalom tzerich lamtin al davar u'matun matun kama shavya." He says, "I've proved here that you should say vayavor, that there are sources that back up the idea of saying vayavor." Uvekuntres harishon katavti biyalduti dvarim neged mashe katavti kan. He says, "When I was young, I held like the Shtilei Zetim. I said we should follow the Arizal. We should follow against the minhag." Why did they take that approach? He said, "Kefi ma shehemina ozni la'omrim li." I believed what people told me. I said, "What does that mean?" This line really gets us into this machloket that he says, "I believed what they." What did he believe? He says, "People like Rav David Mushraki, the Shtilei Zetim, and others, many other Talmidei Chachamim, they said the minhagim don't have any basis. We're just doing this, right?" And the ikar halacha is like the Shulchan Aruch, like the Arizal, like the Magen Avraham, right? And there's no basis for what we're doing. What we're doing is, it must be a mistake. It must be a mistake. And the Ma'aretz says, but now, ad she'evanti v'ra'iti smuchim, I found sources that backed up the minhag. So the Ma'aretz took the approach, he says, I found sources that back up the minhag, we should keep the minhag, right? So what we have now is a kind of a split. Those who follow the Shtilei Zetim's approach, basically, you know, default is the minhag is not so important. If you find that the Shulchan Aruch's psak is questionable and that the minhag is very, very strong and has very good sources, you'll follow the minhag that goes from before, like the Rambam. If not, change. The Ma'aretz's approach is, he said, I can find a basis for the minhag. I can explain to you that we're following the Ravad, we're following the Rambam, we're following this Achon, this Rishon, right? So if so, why should we change? Why should we change? So this was the approach of the Ma'aretz. This is the approach of the Ma'aretz. Now,
we shouldn't change from the minhag.
Why? Because I can explain the old minhag. Now, the Ma'aretz did change certain things. He wasn't opposed to change. Take a look, for instance, in page 12. Ashela, this is ends up being a machlok nishami in the Baladi. The Ma'aretz discusses in Chelek Gimel Simei Resh Yud Ayin Vav, saying Hallel in the Bet Knesset on the night of Pesach. We know the minhag is the Shami will say the Hallel with a bracha. Baladi will say the Hallel without a bracha. How did this happen? Very simple. The old minhag in Teman was not to say Hallel. They didn't say it. Why? The Rambam doesn't mention it. The Rif doesn't mention it. The Gemara doesn't mention it. Right? How can you say, why should we say it? It's mentioned in Geonic sources, in the Masechet Sofrim, other places. Right? But the Rambam, the Rif, and the Gemara don't mention it, so we don't do it. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rishonim, who gave great authority to those Geonic sources, to those Masechet Sofrim, which says you should say Hallel. We'll discuss this in more detail towards Pesach. So the Shulchan Aruch, you should say it, and the Sfaradim say it with a bracha. So many people start to say it with a bracha. So take a look at what the Ma'aretz says in page 13 about this question. And look what he says on page 13. What would you think he would say based on what he said? He should say, nothing doing. We follow the minhag, Rambam, Rif, Gemara. But he says, no. He says, Arsher al-ken, aval pisha ha'iti, הרבה מהקהילות כאן הניגו עצמן לומר הלל בבית הכנסת בברכה. I see many, many shuls. Many בתי כנסת say it with a ברכה. אנוכי לא כן עימדי. וכיוון שנהגו לקרותו, מי דהבה הבה. You make a mehag to read it? Be my guest. You want to read the הלל? I have no problem you read the הלל. אבל לא יברך. לא יברך. Right? You want to be מחמיר like the שולחן אורך to add. Always to add, but not to take away. Right? That was his approach to the Nosach HaTefillah also. We're not going to get so much into it. He said, you want to add Lechadodi? Beautiful. I love Lechadodi. The Maharit was very into Kabbalah. He read the Zohar. He quotes more Zohar than the Shtilei Zetim does in his books. He quotes the Arizal all the time. Right? But to add always, not to take away, not to change the Nosach HaTefillah. The Nosach HaTefillah, you know, that's why if you look at the Baladi Sidur, is the old Nosach HaTefillah for the Barachot, the Shmonasa, but adding many things, many things are added that the Temanim never had before. Because why not? Because if the Gdolei Ador say we should say Lecha Dodi, beautiful, we should follow the Gdolei Ador. Just we shouldn't be Mekel to take away from the old Minhag. Right?
Pula Tzadik is the
Maritz. I'm sorry, I should point out. Is the Chuvot of the Pula Tzadik. Of the Chuvot of the Maritz. Chuvot of the Maritz, Pula Tzadik. He also wrote other Sfarim. He wrote the Sfarim on Shechita, Sfarim on Hilchot Nida. But his two main Sfarim are the Etz Chaim on the Sidur and Tshuvot Pula Tzadik. Right? Take a look what he says in the Etz Chaim about. Another very mass, every day is relevant. On page 14. What's this about? Mizmor Letoda. Saying Mizmor Letoda and Pesukei Dezimra. So he says, look what he says. Da, ki bezman hakadmonim lo haya nahug lomar Mizmor Letoda. Achim matchilim yad, achas yom Baruch Shamar, yichabod. Hashem Lo'olam. He said, the Minhag was never saying Mizmor Toda. And he gives you the sources. It's not mentioned in the Rambam. It's not mentioned in the Gemara. It's not mentioned in the Rif. We never said it before. But on page 15, look what he says. He says, so what? So we didn't say. So now we can say it. What's wrong? Take a look. He says, Omnam na'agu b'zeh mikarov. Nowadays, recently, they started to say it. Right? V'nachonu. Lefi sheyesh b'zeh ribuy shevach. Lo yitbarach. More shevach to Hashem. What could be better? כל שכן לפי מאמרם שכל השירות עתידות ואין בזה משום יתרון ולא משום או משום הפסק. He says, don't think there's a problem of הפסק. You might have thought you're not allowed to speak between Baruch Shamar and Ishtabach, so how can you add an extra perek of Tehillim? He says, no, there's no הפסק. Right? פסוקים כאלו מעין הזמירות אין בהם חשש. She says, there's no, we lose nothing by saying מזמור לתודה. The פוסקים say you should say מזמור לתודה. I mean, I could not say it, but now we could say it. Now we could say it. And this really comes to, we're skipping ahead 300 years, when you have the Dardaim, you have Rav Yechiel Kapach, who got up and said, anything that's not mentioned in the Rambam, we should not follow. Right? Not only should we follow the Rambam, anything which is not in the Rambam, we shouldn't do it. We should be opposed to it. Just because it's not in the Rambam. Right? That was the Dardai approach. And you see that the Maharitz, for everything that he respected, the old Minhag, there's nothing wrong with adding. There's nothing wrong with doing additional things, right? And even more so, he recommended times. He said you should stand to say kiddush like the Arizal, even al pi Kabbalah. He said we should have chumrot and hanagot tovot according to Kabbalah, because you know, again, as long as you don't introduce a kula, take a look in six, then you see his derech. He says yesh ma. This is in the Haggadah, Etz Chaim. יש מחמין לקדש מועמד כספירת רבינו אריזל שכל הקידושים מועמד על פי הסוד ומנהג רוב ישראל לקדש מיושב. Our the classical מנהג is to make קידוש sitting down Friday night, כי לא יצריך הרמב״ם, next page, לקדש מועמד רק בקידוש לסוכה, only סוכות you have to stand. ומי הוא מחמיר לקדש מועמד, טוב עושה. It's better to stand for קידוש. Why? כי לדעת הרמב״ם אין זה עושה איסור. Right? It's nothing wrong with saying קידוש standing for the רמב״ם, you just don't have to do it. Arizal says to do it, you should follow the Arizal. Right? And again, even though, so what's his derech then? What's his way of getting to halakha? What's his way? Take a look at page 18. This line is maybe the one line takeaway about the derech of Arizal. Page 18 in Tshuvat Pula Tzadik, Chelek Aleph. Yeah.
Also, Lemaise, what do Temanim do now for Kiddush on Friday?
So, we're not in the. Arizal says that you should stand. I think even the Baladi stand, the women oftentimes sit because they don't have to follow Minhagim al-Pi Kabbalah. They're not Kabbalists. Men are mekubalim.
And Shami in general.
Shami, sometimes the women stand also. But we'll get into it more when we get into Kiddush. Now we're just trying to get the cleansing.
Sit down?
I think the Baladi and the Shami, everyone stands. I think everyone stands for Kiddush. Friday night. Shabbat day was a different story. But we'll get to it when we get, if we're going to be doing Shabbat, so we'll get to it. But look in number 18. What's the point here? Kedekatvu poskim zal Eretz Teman atre da Rambam v'Rav Yosef Karo. In other words, we have two rabbis. We have the Rambam and Rav Yosef Karo. So now, what's the million-dollar question? What's the million-dollar question? What do you do when there's a machloket between the Rambam and Rav Yosef Karo? So what do we say? What did the Shnei Zetim say? Even the Shnei Zetim was in favor of keeping certain minhagim, very well-founded minhagim. The Shnei Zetim didn't get rid of reading the Targum in the Bet Knesset, even though the Shulchan Aruch said you don't need to. Right? So he was in favor of certain minhagim. But the Shnei Zetim would say, if there's a conflict, usually we'll go like the Shulchan Aruch. So the Maritz is full of contradictions in this. Every place is a little different. Sometimes he says, follow the Shulchan Aruch against the Rambam. Sometimes he says, follow the minhag against the Shulchan Aruch. So a lot of ink has been spilled trying to work out if there's any pattern. Is there any pattern to this approach in the Maritz? So take a look. Ratzabi gives it a shot. He tries to say, look at page 22. We'll skip forward a little bit. Page 22, Ratzabi gives what he thinks is the approach of the Maritz. I'm sorry, I didn't box off this one. It's on the right-hand side. On the right-hand side. All right? So look in the second bold section on the right-hand side. I'm sorry, I didn't box it off. My mistake. Hatotza'ah ha'ola, he said, I investigated this. Many of our minagim follow the Rambam. Rishumim bo umisadim alav vugu v'apiyaref l'mal v'kodesh geyone bavel v'gam sfarad. Avel be'inyanim she'eni adua b'hem minhag. Now this is Rabbi Tabi's approach all through. Things where there's no minhag, for instance, lemiut mitziutam, right? Because they're not common. Right? One of the main examples we skipped a little bit is if you forget Retzevach Litzenu in Suda Shlishit in Birkat HaMazon. According to the Rambam, you have to go back and say Birkat HaMazon again. Why? Because Suda Shlishit, you must eat bread. Anytime we know Halacha, whenever you must eat bread, you have to go back and repeat Birkat HaMazon if you forgot Retzevach Litzenu. Right? But the Shulchan Aruch says Suda Shlishit is a machloket. Some poskim hold you don't have to eat bread. Therefore, if you forgot Retzevach Litzenu, you shouldn't go back. You're not allowed to go back. Safek Brachot La'akel. Maritz says, who could go against the Shulchan Aruch? Who could go against the Shulchan Aruch? We shouldn't go back. Even though the Rambam says to go back, but we shouldn't go back because we should be afraid for the Shulchan Aruch not to go back. So would you say there's a minhag? What to do when you forget Retzevach Litzenu? It's not really, it's a rare thing. Every while and again, somebody does it. You know, there's no minhag. Minhag is like, how do I do the shaking the lulav in the Knesset? Everyone does it. Every year we do it. There's no minhag for that. So there, he says, "Dvarim she'en yadua b'minhag limud mitzam diskegid la'achat racham ha'obar en maritz befe malek edat maran de'lo ka'arambam." Against the Rambam, follow the Shulchan Aruch. So this is Rav Tabi's interpretation. He thinks this is true across the board. Again, not every psak of the Maritz is easy to explain on this basis, but this is one way to understand the Maritz is that minhagim kind of connects to what we said before. The new rabbi is the Shulchan Aruch, but if the old minhag has a basis based on the Rambam, based on sources, we should keep the old minhag. We should keep the old minhag. But if it's any new question, any halacha, we would say it's not founded on a minhag, we should follow the Shulchan Aruch, right? And Ratzabi applies this in many many places. This is his derech in Psak Halacha. But the minhagim, in general, go according to the Rambam. So that's again, it's not entirely clear every place that this fits every case in the Maritz, it's definitely the best attempt I've seen to try to make a rule out of it. Of course, you can never second guess a posek. A posek sometimes he thinks what he thinks is right, he'll overturn the minhag. So maybe that's also a factor you have to take into account. So this was the machloket between the Shtilei Zetim and the Maritz, And basically was a very big contributor to the idea of the split between the Shami and the Baladi. Now, the Shami and the Baladi, many of the Shami follow the Maharitz also, right? So it's not so clear to say who was accepted, who was not accepted. Just give an example, moving forward 300 years, people say, well, 200 years, the 19th century. They're trying to work out, what were they doing there? Did they follow Maran? Did they follow Shtei Zetim? Did they follow Shulchan Aruch? Did they follow the Maharitz? Who was accepted, right? So there's a book called Evan Sapir, written by Rabbi Yaakov Sapir. He was Ashkenazi, lived in Eretz Israel, and he was sent to collect money in Australia for the yeshivot, Australia. So he writes, he has a fascinating book, Evan Sapir, about his travels, like a Marco Polo, right? The 19th century, he was a shaliach, and he stopped. Where do you stop on your way to Australia? Teman, right? And in many other places he also stopped. So his book is full of interesting stories. He was Talmid Chacham, so he knew what he was doing. And in his book he has a whole section about his experience when he visited Teman, I think in the 1860s, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Yaakov Sapir, right? So he says, look at page 24. He says, look at page 24. He visited Sana'a, which was where the Maritz was the Av Beit Din. Maritz, of course, died 100 years prior. He says in page 24, he says, Od Beit Knesset Gram, Umfarash, and Mori Yechye Salah. In Teman, they call the rabbi Mori, right? Mori Yechye Salah, right? The Beit Knesset of the Maritz. Hu haya po rav Av Beit Din, legaon tiferet, v'katav kama sfarim, ri'itim b'chtav yad, shelot v'tshuvot u'psakim al arba turim, וחיבור מיוחד על הלכות שחיתות ותרבות זבח תודה, ותקבל הוראותיו, והנעקי ליים, ותתקבל הוראותיו בכל המדינה, כמרן בית יוסף והרב רמה, זצל. Right? So he says, he's made that from his asking around the Timan, who do you follow? Maritz Pesach was accepted. That's what he testifies. One example of this, I didn't photocopy it for you, is when he visited Sana for Pesach. So they brought him the soft matzot, and he's like, I don't know if I can eat this. And so the rabbi of the town, who was Shami actually, the rabbi of the town, the Av Beit Din of Sana, who was inviting him for Pesach, he said, no, don't worry, you can eat it. It's fine. He said, you don't have to eat stale matzot. It doesn't have to be 30 days old. You know, I know you Ashkenazim, you will only eat matzah if it's already stale and dry. Yeah. It's okay. It's kosher for you also. And he told him, he said, we will only make a bracha al achilat matzah on matzah shmura. Here in Teman. Now, this is a big machlokot rishonim. If all you have is matzah that's not matzah shmura, can you make a bracha al achilat matzah on matzah she'ena shmura? Shulchan Aruch says yes. The Rambam, Maritz, Paskin, like the Rambam, cannot make a bracha on matzah that's not matzah shmura. And the fascinating thing is that this, the Av Beit Din of Sana, who is Shami, told him, we do not make a bracha al achilat matzah. Against the Shnei Zetim, against the Shulchan Aruch, like the Maritz. So again, this is one indication that things were not as simple as we assume them to be, right? Now, why does this get to be so? Why is this so important? What they did in the 19th century? Why is this so important? What's so important is because of what happened when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Temanim began to arrive in Eretz Yisrael in 1882. When they got to Eretz Yisrael, so they kept their minhagim. Until. And again, some people just couldn't be bothered. But there were many bad techniques. They kept them in the game. Shami, like the Shami, Baldi, like the Baldi. In other words, the split between how close are you to the Shulchan Aruch and how close are you to the old Minhag remained. Right? But nobody said, oh, we should all become Sfaradim, we should all become Ashkenazim. Until Rav Avad Yosef, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, began to push this issue. He said, you came to Eretz Israel, you have to follow the Shulchan Aruch. Right? Just to pick, a couple of famous psakim of Avad Yosef. One issue was about making a bracha on candles for Yom Tov. The Maritz said, you do not make a bracha on candles for Yom Tov. Only ladlik ner shel Shabbat. No, there's no bracha ladlik ner shel Yom Tov. Right? Another example, Avad Yosef, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, said the Temanim should give up this. They should now start to make a bracha. Like the Shulchan Aruch says, you make a bracha on Erot Yom Tov. Another example, Chalitat Basar. We know that most of the Rishonim say, if I salt the meat is now kosher to eat with no further ado. The Rambam says, no, maybe one of these days we'll get into it. He says, you have to throw the meat in boiling water before you can eat it. You cannot fry the meat in a shallow pan or anything like that. Meat has to be boiled, thrown into boiling water, even though you salted it. called Chalitat Basar. Maybe we'll get into it at some point. Ravad Yosef said, you came to Eretz Israel, you don't have to do that anymore. You can give it up. You can be Mekel.
That was the Fide Maritz that you have to do. Chalitat.
That's the Fide Maritz and the Rambam, yeah. And that, everyone did in Teman. It wasn't everyone did that. People who followed the Shtezitim also did that. Shtezitim were never against that. Everyone did that in Teman. That was a universal minhag to do Chalitat Basar. That they would not eat meat unless it was scalded in boiling water first. And well, maybe one day we'll get into exactly the details of that. How do you do it? Why do you do it? What if you're eating out by somebody else who doesn't do it? But Rav Avadia Yosef said, you came to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to do it anymore. So now, what was Rav Avadia's point? His point was twofold. Well, maybe the best way to do it is, let's read what his son, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, who's now the Rishon Lezion, now the Sephardic chief rabbi. He has a book called En Yitzchak. He has Klalei Kabbalat Torot Shulchan Aruch, page 24. And he gives you, in one paragraph, Rav Avadia's approach to the Temanim.
Who's
Rav Yitzchak Yosef, called En Yitzchak. It's a book on Klalei Halacha. Right? So he writes like this. He says, Af Yotzei Teman, Tzarchim Linhog, Be'eretz Yisrael, Bechol Inyanei Halacha, La'achar She'alu Le'eretz Yisrael, Yedat Maran Shulchan Aruch. She'aya Kan Amar De'atra. Right? So he says, you have to change to follow the Shulchan Aruch. Now it's interesting. Just note, this is not really so directly relevant to us in Chutz Laretz. This whole idea of following Shulchan Aruch because you came to Eretz Yisrael doesn't apply. Some people, you might think that actually because my parents were Israeli, so therefore once they had to follow Shulchan Aruch according to Rav Avadia, and now that we're living in America, we also have to follow the Shulchan Aruch because it stuck to us. Mm-hmm. So I wondered about this. One time when Rabbi Amar was here, Shlomo Amar, so I asked him, what does he think about Moroccans? Can Moroccans in America follow the Moroccan minhagim? He said, absolutely. Absolutely. They can follow the Moroccan minhagim. Because that whole idea doesn't apply in Chutz Laretz. Right?
That if you're...
That you must follow the minhag Eretz Yisrael. If you're in Chutz Laretz, no, you must follow minhag Eretz Yisrael.
So if you go to Israel for like a day or two, you would have to follow the minhag.
No, then you're ben Chutz Laretz. Same way you keep 2 days of Yom Tov. you do the same thing. But if you move to Eretz Yisrael, then Ravadia says, now... you have to pick up the minhag Eretz Yisrael. But there's two parts to Rav Avadia, and that's why the piece about the Shtezim is so important. Take a look. He says, Rak b'inyanei tefillah u'mivtah yamshichu k'yunagam b'teman. He says, for sure, you should keep praying from the Baladi Sidur or the Shami Sidur. You should keep up having the right accent, right? So he didn't try to get rid of the entire minhag temani. Aval b'machloket b'din, yesh lem ninhog k'dad maran. Af b'otam alachot sh'b'teman haya minhag k'arambam. Especially the Chumrah. Now, look what he does here. And Rav Avadia made this very important. Even though there's Rabbanim who wrote the Minhag is like the Rambam, especially who? Maritz and many others. Who's he referring to? Shtilei Zetim. Especially Rav Avadia put front and center the Tshuva and Ravida Zahav that we saw. Malanu vela minhag. What do you need the minhag? What's the minhag? It's not important. We have Maran. So he says, V'nireh shelechol. Now he says, so even in Teman it was a machloket. It was a machloket in Teman, what you should follow. Now, interesting. This already tells you, Temanim are different from all the other groups of Sfaradim. Because in Iraq, they said, we follow the Shulchan Aruch. The rules in Shulchan were accepted in Iraq. In Mitzrayim, in Syria, in Iran, in Morocco, the rules of Shulchan were basically accepted, and only afterwards they began to do things differently. And when they came to Eretz Yisrael, he says, for sure, you have to follow Shulchan Aruch. Temanim were different. In Teman, there was a split. Many of the Rabbanim said, you shouldn't follow Shulchan Aruch in Teman. So the idea that when the Temanim come to Eretz Yisrael, without the Revida Zahav, without the Shtei Zetim, let's say for the Baladi communities, the claim that you should follow the Shulchan Aruch rests solely on Minhag HaMakom. It's only because of Minhag HaMakom. So in that sense, if you're on the side of the Maritz, then Temanim are like Ashkenazim. So whatever you say about Ashkenazim, whatever you say about Temanim, you say about Ashkenazim also. So in that sense, there's much more of a reason for Temanim to continue their minhag even in Eretz Yisrael, because in Teman, many Temanim did not follow the Shulchan Aruch exclusively. They kept the minhagim, not like the Shulchan Aruch, right? So Rav Avadia is saying a double hitter. He's saying, first of all, in Teman was a machloket, right? V'nireh shelechol ha'deot l'achar she'alu la'aretz yesh lehem lifsok k'dat amar da'at ha'maran ha'shulchan aruch. So for sure, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, they should follow the Shulchan Aruch, right? And this was his derech. So So this was his derech across the board on that basis. So what can we say about this in the next 3 minutes? Right. This is a huge topic. We're not going to be nichna machnis roshenu ben machloket to get into this. But we'll say just a couple of things about this nekuda. First of all, again, the first point is very important. Temanim in Teman, in Chutz La'aretz, right? Many of them, or certainly some minagim, everybody kept against Shulchan Aruch, reading the Targum, doing Chalitat Basar. Everybody kept them. Even the Shtilei Zeitim was in favor of keeping them, right? And there's many, there's a question, but many pieces of evidence show that the Maritz was accepted, as, like Devin Sabir said, was accepted as the Marad Atra of Teman. And if that's the case, then it's a very strong case that in Chutz La'aretz they shouldn't follow the Shulchan Aruch, they should follow that Psak. But it may depend on the split between the Baladi and the Shami. What about when they came to Eretz Israel? What should change? So the main point that Rav Avadia made is that the tshuva of Avkat Rochel, Rav Yosef Karo, wrote a tshuva where he said that if you came as individuals, right, if you came as individuals, you're batel to the local community, right? Drips and drabs. And it seems from the Beit Yosef, from the Rav Yosef Karo, that even if you came en masse, even if you came with a large group of people, if you didn't set up a Beit Din on day one for your own community, you're batel, it's over, batel, right? You now have to blend in to the locals. And Rav Avadia Yosef said this basically for Ashkenazim also, because the Ashkenazim also, they used to have a Beit Din, then they left and they came back, they didn't have a Beit Din initially. If people would have listened to him, he would have said the Ashkenazim should also follow the minhag of the Sfaradim, right? And again, there's room to argue in the Avkat Ochel if that's exactly what he means. But one of the things that the Temani, so what was the response of the Temani Poskim to this? The Temani Poskim generally didn't agree with this. Notably, not just Rav Tzabi in recent years, but before also, the Temani, when they first arrived, of Chaim Kassar was the one of the Gedolei Poskim. Rav Yechia, I forgot his name. They didn't write Sfarim, but they said
Chaim Kassar has a Sefer Musar,
right? And he has a Pirush on the Rambam. But Rav Yechia Avshich was also a big Posek, died in 1996. He also felt you should follow the Temani Minagim, even in Eretz Israel. What was the basis for that? So they pointed to sources, Kri Chadash and others, who say that you don't have to have a Beit Din when you first come. As long as you come as a Kehila. Yeah, you're right. If an individual comes and becomes a member of of Ashkenazi community, he comes from Teman to Vilna. There's no Temanim in Vilna. He comes as an individual. You're right. He becomes Ashkenazi. That's the halacha. He has to become Ashkenazi. And the other hand, Ashkenazi comes to Sana, he has to become Temani. Unless he's planning to go back home. He's coming to live in Sana. Halacha is, he must become Temani. If you come as a community, even if you don't have a Beit Din, Mishnah Berurah says this actually. Very last page, take a look at that as our last source. 28, page 28, second to last page. Second to last line. It's the third last line. Rasham, third to last line, the Biur Halacha. The Kila Sheyesh Ba Minyan, Mikre Kila Vaibayim Lesham Nitpalim. You have to have a minyan. Pashut ikamato sheyesh la al kol penim kol tzorche tzibur, kano hanu bet kneset, mitpalim bebukhol yom bet tzibur, yesh lahem more tzedek, a posek, u mikveh, v'chadome. What do you have to have? You have to have a posek, you have to have a mikveh, you have to have a bet kneset with minyanim every day. That's enough. You have to have bet din. That's what's one thing that they point out, that this is not many of the achonim say explicitly, that it's enough to have a community. You have to live as a separate community, Temani Beit Knesset, right? With Temani Posek, a Temani community. And that they had from day one. So that should be enough. To which, of course, Rav Avadia responded, yeah, but you should follow Avkat Rochel. To which they responded, that's circular. Besides, we should follow Rav Yosef Karo, right? But we're just arguing that we shouldn't follow Rav Yosef Karo. So why should we follow Rav Yosef Karo to say you have to have a Beit Din, right? It's an argument about how do you decide who you should follow. So that becomes part of the question. The other answer that they gave was they said that, we had a Beit Din very early. It was only a few years after they arrived that they initially were with the Sfaradim, with the Beit Din, and then they very quickly formed their own one. Not the first year, but a few years later. A few years later, first. So you're going to say that because they had little time, that's it, it's over? And they bring proofs that you don't have to have Bedin day one. You have Bedin, anytime you have Bedin, even if you started one today, you can now be a separate community and follow your own minhagim. So that's another question. These are dvarim amukim. These are very deep in yanim. We cannot decide on these questions ourselves. We have to aselchav. If a person's in Eretz Israel, then aselchav even to decide this question. And most of the Temani poskim say that pachot yoter, that this position was not the one that we accept, that we can continue to follow our minhagim. We're obligated to continue to follow our piskei halacha, even in Eretz Israel. But I can't argue on Ravadia. He was a huge posek, and this was his opinion. Even though nowadays, you know, the Temanim don't have a bet din, but that's because the Medina won't allow them to have it. But the Temani Dayanim sit on the Bet Din HaGadol. They're members of the Bet Din HaGadol. So therefore, just like Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, Temanim, everyone sits together on the Bet Din. That doesn't take away the separateness of the community. And they have their own small Bet Din also. So this was the Machloket. And this got very sharp. There's a lot of harsh words being written. Rav Tzabi himself got into a lot of trouble with the Temani Rabbanim. Temani Rabbanim criticized him. There's a Gilui Dat. You can get it online. Gilui Dat. From many of the Temani poskim attacking Rav Tzabi for the sharp words he said against Rav Avadia, and he's very extreme in this, and he writes things shelo v'derech eretz, very very sharp words against the Gadol Hador, which he got in trouble with the Temani Rabbanim also. But that's politics. We don't have to get into that so much. So for us, what are we left with again on the question of Eretz Israel? If you move to Eretz Israel, Asel Harav, you know, in general, Temani poskim didn't follow this approach. Even if they didn't speak as sharply about it as Rav Tzabi. Even in Chutz Aretz, we're going to see that we also have to have Asel Harav. We're going to try to present the two approaches. Every time we cover an issue, we're going to talk about the approach of the Maritz, together with that Rav Tzabi and the contemporary poskim. We're going to talk about the approach of the Shtilei Zeitim, and for that we can use the Sefer Arichat HaShulchan, Rav Shlomo Korach, who's much more in the Shami direction, and we'll try to cover his approaches to a lot of these issues also. And again, whether you're Shami or Baladi, you still have to. You shouldn't simply assume because I'm Baladi, I follow the Maritz, and in everything. Some of the Psakim should go according to Shulchan Aruch. Certainly, new Shelot, and certainly if you're Shami, this is not a simple thing to figure out. Sometimes you may have family minhagim which could guide you. On some of the issues which the Shami themselves are split on, and really the answer is Asel Harav. You have to figure out, you have to decide, which approach you're going to go with. But whichever approach you go with, and Chutz Aretz, certainly you're going to have certain things which are simply universal Temani Minagim, even though you're Shami. Okay, so this concludes our introduction. Yeah, any questions?
I'm sorry, I just have an appointment. I have to run.
Okay,
so
very good.
Really
okay, sorry for going a few minutes over.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
So
we'll put it back with
you. Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
So the Temanim that now live in the that are now living in the U.S. So if the Minhag, I think the Minhag Ramagram is really like Ashkenazi.
So that's a very good question. It's a question for Sfaradim. It's a question for Ashkenazim. It's a question for Sfaradim also. In other words, if I learn in Yeshiva University, I live in Washington Heights. I pray every day with Ashkenazim Minyan. How can I say that I'm Temani? Maybe I'm actually Ashkenazi.
Right.
That's the question. Same thing goes for the Sephardic students. I pray in the Sephardic Minyan. Okay. So that could be that could help you if you're Sephardic. But for Temanim, it's hard. I asked Rav Tzabi what he thought about this question. So he said it's very simple. He said, if you look in halachot of these halachot and Shulchan Aruch, they say you only become a member of the broader community if you arrive she'en da'ato lachzor, right? That's the description the Gemara talks about. Makom she'nagu, makom she. They say someone comes from a place that has one minhag to a new place. If they come and they intend to settle in the new place, they come from Sarnat to Vilna, they're going to stay in Vilna. They're going to move there. Then they have to become Ashkenazi.
So aren't we considered like that?
So this is a question every person has to ask themselves. If it's da'ato lachzor
to Sana,
not the Sana, but in nowadays we live in a melting pot. Every Eretzel. Nowadays the poskim say that your community is defined not so much by a town, right, but by the community you affiliate within a town. right? So for instance, if you always pray at a Sfaradi Beit Knesset, and you hang out with Sfaradim, and you you observe the Sfaradic Minhagim, then you can say, even though you live in a town where, let's say, the majority of people are Ashkenazi, because your community forms a separate community within that community, so then you can say, I'm Sfaradi. Right? Same thing with Ashkenazi, even though, let's say, you live in a place where it's all, there's mostly Sfaradim, we don't just follow the majority. And this is not a chidush that we came up with in the 20th century. This is, I mean, this is the way of, you know, that the Poskim said already going back 500 years. When the when all after the expulsion from Spain, all the communities got mixed up. You had towns where there was Sfaradim and Ashkenazim living together, such as Saloniki, such as Amsterdam. Sephardi communities and Ashkenazi communities living side by side. And the Poskim said, as long as you live as separate communities, as long as you have your own Beit Knesset, like we said, what the Mishnah Berurah said, you have your own Beit Knesset, you have your own Posek, you have your own Mikveh, right? Ideally, your own Beit Din, right? Then you form a separate community. You could have friends who are Ashkenazi, that doesn't take away. So if, so what Rav Ratavi said to me, he asked me, he said, are you planning to, for the rest of your life, you're going to hang out with Ashkenazim, you're never going to pray in a Temani Shul? Or is this just a temporary thing? Because where you live, there's no Temani Beit Knesset. so you have no option. So I said, obviously, I want to, you know, move. When I live somewhere permanently, I want to move to a place which has a Temani Beit Knesset, a Temani Minyan. I want to be a part of that community. So he said, in that case, your dato lachzor, your plan is...
And if you don't have the das, then you would have to...
That's what he told me. He said, you cannot be mekel, at least. I don't know about lachmir. He told me, you cannot be mekel, like the Temani Minhagim, against the Minhagim Mekom. If your plan is that for the rest of your life, you're... same thing we'd say for a Sfaradi. He has no interest in being Sephardic, in the sense of affiliating with the Sephardic community. It's very hard to tell him you can rely on the kulot of Sfaradim under such circumstances. That's that's a very serious shayla. If a person says, listen, I want to be Temani and follow the kulot of Temanim, Chumot is a different question. Maybe Chumot might be different. I want to follow the kulot of the Temanim while never having any intention of being a part of a Temani community. That would be a serious shayla. I should ask a posek about that. Every individual has to decide themselves what they're gonna be doing. Okay, very good.
And also, just want to thank the.